Good morning. How do you do? Unhappy and unhealthy, I hope. Jammed six families in a rundown flat, dark stairways, roof coming down, streets dirty, rent sky high, sickness all around you. Segregated in my area, I hope. Me? My name is Slums. You've seen me around. Slums are the cemeteries of the living, he says. Jim Crow is the undertaker, he says. He's the one I want to tell you about, this A.M.E. Reverend, this Windy City Alderman. He says, I gotta go. But stick around. Let me give you the lowdown on a guy who's trying to run slums out of town.
Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom. Dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Among the outstanding aldermen of Chicago who have fought for democratic housing programs and for better race relations is the minister of the Woodlawn African Methodist Episcopal Church, the Reverend Archibald Carey, alderman of the Third Ward. In part by transcription, we bring you the Carey story in a chapter entitled Anatomy of an Ordinance.
Yeah, my name is Slums. You know me. I cover 26 square miles of Chicago. I got old shacks, tenements, hovels, sheds, dark, dreary streets occupied by a good half million people. I do all right, and I'm growing. Well, part of me I'm bothered about right now is the South Side part. It's a part they call the Black Belt. Narrow tongue of land about 1.5 miles wide, 7 miles long. Got 400,000 people packed in it solid. High sickness and death rate, and surrounded, nice and segregated. Easy to get in, hard to get out. There I was, going about minding my own business, like any slum should, crippling children, furnishing more'n my quota of delinquents, just adding to the misery of my population, when suddenly my slum sense told me something was going wrong over at the city hall. This alderman I want to tell you about was raising his hand in the council chamber.
Chair recognizes Alderman Carey from the Third Ward. Does the alderman wish to speak on the proposed ordinance to outlaw discrimination from publicly aided housing?
I do.
Proceed.
He got up. He didn't call my name, but I could feel he was going to talk about me and my shacks, my tenements, my 400,000 people. He was out after me.
The purpose of the ordinance against discrimination in publicly aided housing is to guarantee that where public aid is provided for housing units, there shall be no discrimination on account of color or religion or ancestry. This ordinance is the simple pronouncement of a basic American principle that where the people's money and the people's powers are used to create something, all of the people, regardless of race or creed, shall be entitled to share in the benefits without discrimination.
I was bothered about this ordinance he was talking about. I could see he was after wiping me off the map. Me, who'd never done him a lick of harm. Why, I remember this alderman when he was just starting to wear long pants. He was born in my area. I went easy on him. Lots of kids around him died of consumption and malnutrition. Naturally, I wouldn't have been able to hold up my head as the best slum in the country if I hadn't given him something to remember me by. So I gave him a touch of a disease I thought would take away the most troublesome part of him, his voice. He'd come home from the play yards out in the streets, just came home and sank down on the floor. He didn't even groan. The disease hit him so quick.
Arch! Archie? Arch, son.
His mother fell down beside him, rolled him over. He couldn't say a mumbling word. He was the fourth child I'd struck down like that in 4 days. Same symptoms, throat and head swelling.
If we don't get him to a doctor soon, Carolyn, I'm afraid we've lost a son.
His father, Bishop Carey, a man who had annoyed me all his life with his sermons about slum clearance, put him to bed and called the doctor. He came, examined the boy, called Mrs. Carey aside.
How is he?
Now, this type of infection strikes suddenly. It's usually fatal within a few hours.
What can we do?
Only one thing we can do, operate now.
Oh, doctor.
The swelling is so great, it's hard to tell how much infection there really is. I'm asking your permission to go on.
You want it now?
He needs it now.
It'll be a serious operation?
Ma'am, it's most serious. In fact, to be blunt, there's a possibility it might fail.
Oh, I...
The other children who had this infection didn't live. It's hard to track down the cause of a disease when it hits in a slum area until sometimes too many have died. The operation, I've explained what regions are involved.
You said there was a chance of him losing his voice after the operation.
I said that, yes.
One of the glories in having a son for me was the hope that he'd be like his father, use his voice like Gabriel's trumpet.
You speak in religious terms.
My son was raised in a religious family. 4 generations of ministers from his father's side. I'd hoped my son could use his voice as a weapon against injustice, to speak for the people, the right to work and live where they choose.
Madam, have you decided?
It's too much for one to decide.
The bishop leaves it in your hands.
Will tomorrow morning be too late?
I suppose he'll live through the night. Call me in the morning after you've decided.
This doctor went out into my streets and home to his office to wait for the call. I wasn't worried about him. Against the diseases I handled, very few doctors have a chance. I was just going to let them go through the motions of the operation when this woman took things into her own hands. The bishop couldn't believe her.
You say you don't intend calling the doctor? Even after what he said would happen to the boy if he didn't operate immediately?
Even after that?
He may die.
And he may not. Oh, he's wanted to follow in your footsteps. He practices your orations. He's going to have something to say, and he's got to have a voice to say it.
If the doctor can't save that, nothing will.
I'm willing to try something else.
What?
Prayer.
That's what she said. She'd pray over him. Well, naturally, I wasn't bothered. I'd heard prayers in my area before. They hadn't disturbed me. She wanted his voice alive. Well, if she wanted to risk it, it was her fault. His voice was all I wanted to get rid of. She prayed that night.
Dear God, there is so much to be done. So much my boy can do. Please, spare his life and leave him free to lift his voice to help tear down the walls of prejudice and inequality around him. If it be thy will, grant a mother's prayer.
That's the way the prayer went, or words to that effect. Every night the woman was on her knees praying like Hannah, the mother of Samuel. She pledged her son to the Lord's work if he recovered. Somehow the boy slipped through my fingers. In a month he was on his feet and walking again, following his father around the city, imitating his talk and his walk. The bishop appraised him.
You're well. Your voice is back. What do you intend doing with it?
Speaking before the church. Like you.
All right. You'll be my assistant. The doors that have been opened to me will be open to you. My fights will be your fights. We'll travel together.
They were not the kind of pair I usually like to see together. This bishop, who had a reputation for pointing out the economic causes of poor housing, of race prejudice and poverty, and a son who was getting to be the image of him. He went with his father to see President Wilson, ex-President Roosevelt, and to see the superintendent of schools, and all the doors were opened. He stopped in to see the warden of Statesville.
Well, what brings you down this way, Bishop Carey?
I wanted you to meet my son, Warden. Archie, this is Warden Malley.
How do you do, sir?
Is he anything like his father now, Bishop?
Well, I'm training him that way, Warden.
Then I suppose he'll be around trying to prove every poor man in my jail's innocent.
Well, if he sees innocent men coming your way, Warden, he'll come after them. Keep the door to your office open to my son. Your jail's getting crowded. He'll want to know why.
His father took him around to all the places where he'd won a welcome, to political leaders, religious leaders. And this boy, whose life I'd missed taking by a prayer, came home one evening ready to start out as an orator. He spoke to the bishop about a contest a newspaper was running.
So, it's a national contest for the best orator, and you intend to enter it?
The first prize is $1,000. I've been practicing your style.
Oh, it's time you got your own style. Get in and try to win. Speak the truth.
He practiced with the other orators in my area. He went up to the finals. His subject was the Constitution. The judges listened.
The Constitution's language says we the people, not we the white people, not even we the privileged class, not we the high, not we the low, but we the people. And since all citizens are people, they are included in the benefits for which the Constitution of America was ordained and established. The true and only true basis of representative government is equality of rights.
You see why the voice of this Carey bothered me? Somehow I knew he was going to start throwing it against me. As soon as he got out on his own, it wasn't long before he did, he proved to his father that he could follow his footsteps, if not fill him. And the bishop ordained him, gave him a start.
Well, you've had your training now. Hereafter, it's all up to you. As bishop, I'm giving you your first appointment. It'll be at Woodlawn.
Woodlawn?
It's a small church now, just 49 members in the congregation. But it'll grow with the right care. Prove to the people in the community that you want to help them economically as well as spiritually. Break down the walls of segregation that surround this community. And 49 members will be more than enough to start with. This is your chance.
Yeah, this was his chance, and he took it. He surveyed the little Woodlawn church and began building its congregation. I guess they liked what he was preaching about politics and poverty, about jobs and Jim Crow. Parishioners started coming to him with their problems. It was when one came with a problem peculiar to the neighborhood that my troubles began. A widow started it off.
When I'm troubled in spirit, Pastor, your sermons usually help me. I'd hoped you could advise me what to do about my property.
I've examined your case, Mrs. Williams. I'm afraid the answer is not spiritual.
No.
You say you bought a home in the neighborhood and hoodlums tried to drive you out.
I was the first Negro to move into my block. I stayed.
Now there's a court case against you, right?
Yes. Some of my neighbors are saying there's a restrictive covenant that covers this community, bars the sale of property to Negroes and Jews. I stood up against the illegal threats, Pastor, but against the courts. I thought you could help.
I wish I could. I know very little about the law in these matters, but I do know that to put special property rights above the equal rights of people is a sin in the eyes of God. It must be made illegal in the eyes of man. I don't know very much about legal matters, Mrs. Williams, but I'm beginning to see now that if I really want to help with the problems of my parishioners, I've got to go where those problems are, out in the community, where the restrictive covenants are, and then into the court.
You see, then he started out attacking me. Sure, I had a few restrictive covenants helping me corral the colored folks of the city inside that 4 square miles I told you about. Otherwise, how could a good slum get started? People would just move out. Without race segregation, how could you get a black ghetto? I needed those covenants. But this minister, Carey, went to his study and prayed for guidance. But he went somewhere else, too. He went to law school.
You sure you'll have time to take a complete law course, Pastor?
I'm going to take the time, Dean. My people's fight for equality and justice doesn't stop in the church. It stretches out into the courts. I'll be in there to represent them.
Very well. You're registered.
He registered and finished the course and took his law degree and began practicing. And there were cases that came up from the pews that he found answers for in the courts. Then this other parishioner came in. He had a problem that was going to change things even more. He walked into the minister's study.
Oh, Mr. Daly.
Yes. Haven't seen him yet, Reverend?
I've been trying to see the warden all week, Mr. Daly.
There are only a few more days left, Reverend. My son's innocent. If they let me in to see the warden, I could prove he's innocent. Just get me in to see the warden.
I'm doing all I can, Mr. Daly. I'll go out to the penitentiary again today. Now, don't worry. It's only because the warden's been out of his office that he hasn't answered our calls. When my father was alive, he used to take me there to visit. The warden will remember that. I'll speak to him about your son.
So this reverend went out on a call to the pen to look up the warden. He'd been there three times before. Even the warden's secretary was sympathetic.
I'm sorry, Reverend Carey, but the warden's too busy to see anyone today.
This'll take a minute. Tell him it's Carey, Bishop Carey's son.
He knows that, I'm afraid.
I've got to talk to him about the Daly boy. The warden's got to talk to his father before it's...
I'm sorry. He's very busy.
May I wait?
Well,
I'll wait until he's not busy.
He shouldn't have waited. Shouldn't have been so concerned about the fate of the brats that got themselves born in my slums. I knew what he'd see sitting there in the warden's outer office.
Hello, Miss Megan, the warden in?
Well,
Well, don't trouble yourself buzzing him. He's expecting me. We got a golf date. Didn't he tell you?
Well, you see,
Tongue-tied today, Gary. Working in a prison will do that for you. Say, you need to get out on the golf links like me and the warden are doing. Get your mind off these prisoners. Hi, warden. Hi.
I'm sorry, Reverend. The warden
He's
really...
He's too busy to be bothered about the life of a prisoner who got lost in the slums somewhere and found his way here.
Well, maybe if you'll come back, say, in about a week.
I may be back. But I think it's going to take longer than a week. I'll be back when the same doors that stood open to my father are open to me.
He was beginning to see how things operated against the little guys who knew nobody and who had no pull. He didn't like what he saw. He talked it over with his wife, Hazel, and when the next year rolled around, a delegation of laymen called on him. He listened carefully to what they had to request.
This delegation's here to ask you to represent them in the city council.
I'd heard that you were going to ask me. I've something to ask you first.
Well, what is that?
You go out among more people than a busy minister and lawyer gets a chance to. You should know that there's been some bitter criticism against a minister going into politics.
Well, there was some criticism against a minister who thought some of his parishioners' problems should be settled in court, not church. But we see how it works. It benefits everybody.
Mm-hmm. If I thought I could really do some of the things that need to be done for the Southside community, I'd try it, regardless of the criticism.
Well, we're urging you to think it over and try it. From there on, Reverend, it's just a matter of following in your father's footsteps. Think it over.
I tried to keep my slums as clear and quiet as possible while he was thinking it over because I knew he'd give me trouble once he became alderman. He thought over the idea of running, looked for an answer in prayer, and walked through the streets that night, looking over my area, my shacks, my hovels, my tenements and alleys. And the next morning, his wife Hazel said,
I heard you praying all night, Arch. Did you get an answer?
I did.
What was it?
I got my answer when I walked out among the tenements and shacks. When I saw rats and run-down flats and children playing half the night in the streets.
As surely as God gave Moses his answer by burning a bush, the sight of the slums was my answer to do whatever I can to rid the city of them, to strike at the things that create slums: joblessness, segregation, and profiteering by absentee landlords. That sight was my answer, Hazel. I'm running.
And before I knew it, I heard him downtown in the city hall.
Now raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Archibald J. Carey.
I, Archibald J. Carey.
Do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
Where he was taking the oath of office, swearing on this very Constitution he'd won an oratorical contest talking about. After that, he kept his eyes on activities in my area. And when 7 Negro war veterans escaped from my slum and moved into a housing project in Fernwood, naturally I had my allies, hoodlums and race fanatics who swarmed over the grounds, threatening to burn the place down. Maybe they would have, too, but this Windy City Third Ward alderman, with a Second Ward alderman named Harvey, goes in to see the mayor, puts it bluntly.
There'll be a race riot that'll spread over half Chicago unless the rights of Negro veterans to move into decent housing projects are protected out there in Fernwood, sir. If we can get police out there fast enough to show that the city means what it says about equal rights for its citizens, there'll be no trouble. The race fanatics will sneak away. Common sense will take over.
And they got the police out there, and common sense did take over. Only this alderman wouldn't stop at that. He's worried because even some of the police seem sort of confused about what to do about race prejudice themselves. And he introduces a bill in the council chambers that sets up a race relations unit within the police department. And it passes. He puts through a few more bills on one thing or another, bills I don't pay much attention to, until this carry ordinance comes along. Now, like I said, it was designed to wipe my segregated slums out of business. He was on the subcommittee on housing, and together with Alderman Becker, Kells, Weber, Merriam, and 7 others, they put in an ordinance which was going to do away with segregation in housing built with public funds. And he went stomping through the city, talking in nearly all of the 50 wards before churches, clubs, and realtor conferences, trying to get support before the time to vote on the ordinance came up. And it was at one conference where I was sure he had me pinned down. I didn't know what had happened to the family in room B21 in one of my tenements. Happened so often I hadn't bothered to look. But this minister alderman was waiting to tell the conference of realtors about it. They were impatient. Chairman called him to the speaker's table.
The Reverend Archibald Carey ready to tell us about this ordinance of his? Time's very short.
So is my speech, gentlemen. I'm not what I'd call an expert on housing. I'd just like to tell you one of the experiences out of which was born my idea to fight for housing all over the city of Chicago that would be open to all races, all creeds, and that would end segregation in housing. It's about a family in room B21 in a tenement flat in a segregated slum. It began one day recently when I went to visit an old church member. She lived in a tired, sick building that leaned against another sick building. This one was so sick on the inside that the door of room B21 was stuck tight when I knocked, and the woman finally opened it.
Oh, why don't they fix that door? Huh? What is it? Who are you looking for?
I was looking for Mrs. Rogers. She had a room here.
My name's Vines. Mrs. Rogers is dead. My family lives here now.
Your family? Not much room for a family.
My 4 children sleep in the back. My sister's kids sleep up front.
Well, it's so small for so many. Is your husband in?
My husband works on the road. Be back next week. Who are you?
I'm a minister, ma'am.
You're wasting your time. If it's souls you want to save, forget
it. It's lives I'm trying to save, Mrs. Vines. Lives that are trapped and jammed in ramshackle tenements. My church is expanding. We've bought some lots. We're thinking about building some houses.
I thought your husband would like to know about it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Reverend. I didn't know. We've been looking for a place for 3 years.
I know how you feel. I don't know what I can do, but Woodlawn Church is throwing everything we've got into the fight to clear the slums and build better homes. Well, be sure to fix that door. Send your husband over to see me when he comes in.
Yes, Reverend. I sure will.
I walked out into the sunlight, gentlemen, and it came over me that living inside B-21 were 9 people and a tight door that would swing wide open if death knocked on it.
Is that all, Reverend?
Not quite.
It's got to be. We're sorry. There's no time. We've put the question of support of your housing ordinance on our agenda.
It's on too many agendas now. It needs support.
No, nothing's going to happen overnight, Reverend.
But something did happen overnight.
Now, Reverend.
I think you gentlemen saw this morning's paper.
Yes, yeah.
Then you saw the story on page 3. The headline says, Family of 7 burned to death. Trapped in a ramshackle tenement building. 4 children. Door stuck. They'd been trying to find a decent house for 3 years.
Well, you can't blame me for that, can you? Happens in my area kind of often. Yeah, I could just hear him now standing up in the city hall talking for his ordinance.
There are spiritual slums as well as residential. The prime purpose of the redevelopment program is to clear the slums. But to build the finest houses on a Jim Crow basis or ghetto pattern is to try to remove blight by transferring it from a tract of land to the human spirit. The slums are the cemeteries of the living. Jim Crow is the undertaker. Both must disappear from American life.
Well, I guess you say I ought to be happy because the ordinance was defeated 31-13. But this minister alderman just went back out to his Woodlawn AME church, preached another sermon, got some more energy, and went attacking the root causes of the slums all over again. San Francisco heard about his ordinance, sent for a copy of it, and adopted it right away. Now, things ain't bad yet. I'm still spreading and growing. Covering Chicago's 26 acres with dark stairways, dirty alleys, run-down shacks, segregating the blacks away from the whites, the rich away from the poor. Just doing all right by myself. But I'm worried about guys like this Carey. Suppose he and a lot of other guys got together and agreed to do away with me. What in the world would happen to a poor slum like me? What in the world would happen?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it gives us great pleasure to bring you the voice of Mr. Archibald Carey himself.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, this message comes to you by transcription because this very day our Woodlawn AME Church is burning its mortgage, and 2 special services require my personal presence at the church at this very minute. However, I am deeply grateful to Station WMAQ and to the facilities of this outstanding program, Destination Freedom, for the high honor of being selected to appear on this series. I accept it with genuine humility, because personally, I am neither worthy of the time nor the characterization. But I would take this occasion to summon again such talents and energies as we have to create in America shelter, clean and honorable, not only for the families of our citizens, but for the ideals of fair play and equal opportunity which nourish the Republic.
Thank you, Mr. Carey, and congratulations to you and your church from all of us here at WMAQ and Destination Freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of Anatomy of an Ordinance, the story of the Reverend Archibald Carey, Alderman of Chicago's 3rd Ward. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Archibald Carey was played by Oscar Brown, Jr. Others were Janice Kingslow, Weslin Tilden, Dean Almquist, Harvey Hayes, Tony Parrish, and Arthur Peterson. The special music was written by Emil Soderstrom and performed by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week when Destination Freedom will tell the story of one of the brightest stars of the entertainment world, Lena Horne. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.